Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 294, AVS Forum senior writer Mark Henninger and I answer questions from the chat room, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded March 3rd, 2016. Episode 294, Chat Room Q&A. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And by Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/HTG. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and editor of avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is my colleague at AVS Forum, Mark Henninger, senior writer, and he's been on many times. We're going to be talking to the chat room today. Hey, Mark, welcome back.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, should be lots of fun. In fact, as I always say, but now more important than ever, those of you who are logged in to the chat room at irc.twit.tv, and obviously by doing so, you're probably watching live at live.twit.tv. Please post questions for us, because that's what we're here for today, is to answer your questions. So, by the way, put my name, my screen name in your message, because that way it'll turn up in red, different color on my screen, and I'll be able to see it more easily. My screen name is my name, Scott Wilkinson, all one word, no dots or dashes. So, Mark, I'm already getting a bunch of great questions, so let's dive right in, shall we?
Great. Yeah, let's go.
Friendly Manitoba is asking, if a TV has 120 hertz, is there any reason to turn on Samsung's Clear Motion? Now, this gets into a little bit of an issue with what manufacturers call their controls. And they sometimes change the name of their controls as they go. Mark, you're about to go up to Samsung tomorrow to visit their facilities. You might be able to update this for us. As I recall, Clear Motion is their backlight scanning technology, which is different from their frame interpolation control, which is called Auto Motion Plus. Now, you've had some LCD TVs in your studio. What do you think of frame interpolation versus backlight scanning?
I like backlight scanning. You know, it is what you want to turn on. For example, if you're going to watch sports content and you want the ball to not turn into a blurry little fuzzy dot, on LCDs. Now, frame interpolation is certainly that's the controversial topic. It's what people refer to as the soap opera effect.
That's what it causes as a side effect. Yeah.
Yes, and it looks to many people like a homemade video shot on a camcorder, or of course, mm-hmm. like a soap opera. Well, you know, I wish that films were made in a higher frame rate, but it's a false promise. You know, it's a saccharine effect. It doesn't come across as authentic when I look at it. And yet at sometimes I'm just like, you know, it's nice how the camera can pan, you know, smoothly and not have judder, which is also a distracting effect. It's just that, you know, the juddery effect of let's say a movie that's not being interpolated up to a higher frame rate, that's just called director's intent, or at least a limitation that the director worked with. So I avoid it. I don't use it, but I understand what it's trying to make up for.
Right. But you do use backlight scanning.
Yes,
if it was available, which would clear up some motion blur in an LCD TV by turning off the backlight periodically during each frame. Sometimes they scan it. You know, they scan a black line or bar, horizontal bar, from the top to the bottom. It depends. Each manufacturer has a slightly different implementation of that. But I'm pretty sure that's what clear motion is in the Samsungs. Earlier, Samsungs called it LED Motion Plus. So it's pretty confusing there. But in terms of 120 native hertz, I would not turn on backlight or frame interpolation. I agree with Mark on that. But backlight scanning, I think does work very well. Okay, Web 4073 is asking for a dream audio system list. This is kind of interesting. Mark, if you were going to put together your dream audio system, roughly speaking, what would it be? What would the speakers be? So on.
You know, let's start with what it would be, because I think this is an important point to make. It would be something that is much more down the home theater alley than it is a two-channel audio system. Even
good
if
point.
We're talking about listening to two-channel music, I'm just a fan of ambience extraction and the way that a surround system can, in my view, render, you know, even a two-channel recording or, you know, master or whatever. So it would be an Atmos and DTS:X capable system and maxed out as far as speakers go. Now, I wouldn't start naming brands, but what I would say is I would just want it to be able to fit certain parameters. I would want vanishingly low distortion. I would want to be able to reach THX reference levels and exceed them. I would want really low bass reproduction, down to single digits, you know, quite frankly. So the dream system would not be a set of brands or price point or anything like that. It would actually be implementing that multi-channel 3D immersive audio system and making sure that each speaker and amp, you know, in the system could deliver pure audio up to levels, you know, beyond the point where it's reasonable.
Well, you're a youngster and relatively speaking, and so you know, maybe
are only very brief moments where you get those. Really,
where you get that? Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm sure you don't, as I certainly don't, listen to things cranked up where everything is that loud.
No, I'm not,
I don't do that. Yeah, exactly. This is a very interesting point, though, and sacrilege to two-channel purists. You know, up mixing, what, taking a two-channel source and putting it into Atmos, into surround and overhead and everywhere else. Right. You know, this is a matter of subjective taste. I happen to agree with Mark on this. I love hearing multi-channel music, and when it's two-channel, I'll up mix it as well. But there are plenty of people out there who would find that to be just anathema. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. That's our preference. I, like you, would want a surround system for my audio system and an overhead, you know, over 3D immersive sound system as well. In terms of brands, I might go out on a little bit more of a limb. I love Revel speakers. I love, at the high end anyway, I've really heard some wonderful demos from MBL. Certainly nothing I can afford, probably ever, but they are really great. The high frequency and mid frequencies of many MBL systems are omnidirectional, which means they send sound out in all directions rather than just forward as a traditional speaker. So you might need to be more careful about where they're placed in the room, boy, I've heard some wonderful sounds out of those. But even, you know, I mean, a Dream System, if you wanted to, if you wanted a Dream System but couldn't spend an unlimited amount of money, certainly the new ELAC speakers would be a good choice. Mark, you've looked at some low-cost speakers anyway recently. I mean, and I know ELACs are among your faves. Any others you want to mention?
Well, sure. I've actually, as far as Atmos capable systems go, I've checked out a KEF reference, you know, KEF R series system, rather. Also, some Klipsch RP280 FA speakers, which have the Atmos built into them. I've had the Pioneer Elite system for some time, and I just got modules from PSB, which I pretty much just right now have to take them out of the boxes and put them on top of the Imagine X system that I recently reviewed, but revisit it as a full Atmos capable system. So, and those are just the reflective style systems that I've done. I've also put speakers up there, you know, with a SVS Prime Atmos capable system, and also done the same thing with the Golden Ear speakers. So yeah, I've had some.
I was going to mention Golden. I was going to mention Golden Ear as well as being another system that consistently makes a great demo. That I've every demo I've heard of Golden Ear systems have just been fabulous. So
I agree; those have been wonderful. And under a price no object, I mean, I guess if we're going to just point it out, the JBL Synthesis demo at CDO just unbelievable. So yeah, if you've got all the money and you can just go to JBL, they'll take care of you.
Forever. Yes, the M2s. In fact, I was at a pre-Grammy party, and I wrote about this on AVS, where there were several rooms that had JBL systems in them. There was one that had three JBL 705s, which are derived from the M2, smaller, in the front, and then 708s in the front and 705s in the surround and overhead positions in the DTS room and elsewhere. And then I got a comment from somebody who had a system like that, but with M2s, these gigantic, wonderful speakers, as the front, right, and left. And that kind of system, man, I mean, the one I heard was just phenomenal. So great. And with the M2s in the front would be all that much better. Yikes. okay, let's see here. Okay, SoCal Ray Jr. is asking, since he helped me set it up, how am I liking the Epson LS10000 laser illuminated projector, actually a hybrid laser illuminated projector? And the answer to the question is I'm liking it a lot. It is looking really good. And I thank SoCal Ray Jr. so much for coming out and helping me set up the screen and set up the projector. Even did a calibration, which got the errors very low. By the way, SoCal Ray Jr., I'm still waiting to get those results from you. So email them to me, would you please? Thank you very much. But yeah, I'm really digging it. It's looking really, really good. I just got the screen is a little too low, and I just got the taller stand to put it up high enough where it's needs to be. So the review is proceeding, but I'm digging it totally. I think it's really very good. Now Rob in the chat room is asking, do I have an opinion on bias lighting behind large screen TVs? And the answer is yes. I have an opinion. I think it's a very, very good idea. Mark, have you ever used bias lighting behind a screen? Yeah.
Yes.
So do you agree? Do you think that that's a good thing to do?
I think that it's a technically good thing to do that I nonetheless skip so that
really?
I can have that dark room experience. I like the dark.
Interesting.
But, you know, that really just speaks to, you know, also how you calibrate your TV, whether your TV is capable of a calibration that's watchable in a darker room or not. Some OLEDs, you know, some of those, you know, Pinnacle plasmas, some very good full array local dimming LCDs, I think you can get away with a really dark room. You know, I don't get eye strain, which is another argument for it. But the main argument for it, of course, is that it really helps increase the perceived contrast, you know, effectively it masks imperfectly dark blacks to some degree, as well as, you know, keeping your irises somewhat contracted. So
at the right opening, you know, you bring up an interesting point about contrast, and I should probably try and get somebody on to talk about bias lighting in the age of high dynamic range, because high dynamic range, of course, is basically if you're doing it right, you're getting lower black levels and higher peak white levels. And so I wonder if the conditions or the recommendations for a bias light will change for high dynamic range.
They will, actually. I'll tell you, I'm not going to say who or where because I can't, but I had a conversation with somebody that we both know in the industry while looking at some HDR TVs. And during that conversation, I brought up the fact that I was surprised that the TV makers aren't putting color correct LEDs on the back of the TVs now. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, it would be like having the Philips Ambilight, which was a thing for a while, except that if you actually had a setting that was like color correct for cinema mode or color correct for normal mode, you could maybe have a couple, you know, for the cold color temperature and then the D6500, you know, your accurate color temperature, whatever. Right. 6500K, I mean. You know, that this would really be a plus. And so I was like, well, if it's implemented, please send me a check. But, you know, the reality is that with HDR, it's a greater, it probably would be more useful because that is going to put a greater stress on the viewer. I mean, you know, they've spent so many years preaching, you know, limiting the how bright it gets, you know, and again, you know, keeping that bias light in there. So yeah, I would think it would almost become a necessity. I'd be surprised if we don't start seeing some sort of feature like that.
Yeah, the Philips Ambilight. I always said, you know, that it's, as it changes color, you know, if it's mostly red on the screen, it can go red, and if it's mostly green, you know, so on. That's just so gimmicky and horrible. I hate it. But if you can hold it at D65 or whatever, and just keep it there, then it's a useful thing. And I would love to see more manufacturers do that. I've heard talk about how grading engineers, people who actually grade the content for high dynamic range, actually sometimes can't sit there more than half an hour or 45 minutes at a time without eye strain because of the higher brightness. So I'm hoping to get a color engineer in here at some point to talk about that, because that's seems to me to be a real concern. So that's kind of, and it could be very well that could very well be that that a bias light would help with that. Absolutely. So let's see here. I had a question from Aspire. I have three PC stereo sockets and I want to feed sound from all three into RCA inputs on my common speaker. What is the best way to do it? Speakers only have one RCA. Okay, so they're stereo speakers. They're powered speakers. They have one RCA input into them, and you got three different sources coming in. How do you do that? Well, my first thought is an AV receiver, but I think a simpler solution would simply be a switch. You know, I'm sure you can get a switch on Amazon or anywhere, RCA switch, three in, one out, or five, four in, one out, something like that. Mark, do you have any other ideas on that?
Yeah, a small, cheap mixer, maybe.
Oh, yeah, center. Then you could listen to all three at the same time, then.
yeah, or whichever one you want, you know.
Right,
I'm
yeah.
a DJ. Mm-hmm.
You are a DJ, that's right. So a little, and you use mixers all the time.
Yeah. It's a great way to do it, really, and you can, they have inexpensive ones that just have RCA plugs, you know, so. Check it out. Hmm.
Here's a related question. Joel H. is saying, I'm looking for a cheap mixer for my home computer stereo receiver MP3 player entertainment system, listening to usually two of the inputs at a time. So it's just what we were talking about, a cheap mixer. Now
the USB one, I think, in this case, right?
Yeah, sounds like it. So a USB mixer. Well, in fact, I have sitting on my desk right now as we speak, a Mackie Onyx Blackjack, which has some microphone inputs, but they can also be line level inputs. Mackie, in my opinion, makes fabulous equipment, just wonderful. And this wasn't that expensive, as I recall, maybe $100 or $200. But the brands I would look at would be the name brands, Mackie, Tascam, JBL might make little speaker, little mixers.
Alesis has an inexpensive,
There you go.
They have some inexpensive USB jobs that are nice.
Mm-hmm. Emily the Strange has a great question here. What is the difference between a TV's Hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, and, the thing just bumped on me. Oh, FPS, frames per second. This is a great question. Hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, abbreviated H-Z, named after Heinrich Hertz. It refers to frequency. And in this case, it refers to what is the refresh rate of the TV. That is, how often does it refresh the image on the screen, or how often can it refresh the image on the screen? Now, in the U.S., we have 60. We have a signal, video signal coming in from broadcast and satellite and cable and so on at 60 hertz. And a lot of TV. So TVs have to have at least that. All TVs have at least that. And then they go up from there. Sometimes they have 120 hertz. Sometimes they have 240 hertz. But that doesn't affect the frame rate. It sort of does. We were talking earlier about frame interpolation. And if a TV can go to 120 hertz, if it has 120 hertz refresh rate or 240, then it can do frame interpolation and it can increase the frame rate that's coming in from the source. Any source you get other than a computer, Blu-ray or DVD or broadcast or anything like that, streaming, is going to be 30 or 60 hertz. Movies are frames per second, I should say. 30 frames per second, typically. Movies are shot at 24 frames per second, and sometimes that's what comes off the Blu-ray directly, if that's the preferred way to do it. So you're not going to get any sources with higher frame rate than that other than video games, which, Mark, you're more familiar with video games than I am. And video games sometimes output higher frame rates, right?
Sure. I mean, some people spend a lot of money to get enough video cards to get frame rates, you know, 120 frames per second and faster.
And will the game actually natively output that high a frame rate?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no limitation there on rendering those frames other than processing power, really.
In the computer.
And the display itself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
itself. So there's right. Another thing. If you want to look at 120 frames per second from a video game, you need a TV that has 120 hertz refresh rate. But will it a regular LED TV, LCD TV, accept 120 hertz
right.
frames per
second? The connector also has to support that. You know,
yeah.
So I've seen situations. I mean, I think Panasonic on a few TVs put. It's escaping me now. Not HDMI, but whatever their connector is.
DisplayPort.
DisplayPort, right. So that's yep. One way to do it.
That'll do it. That's one way to do it, yep.
Yeah. But it's certainly no guarantee that you'd have a TV that could support that to begin with.
Right. So there is some difference between hertz and frame rate for frames per second, but they are somewhat related. Let's see. I'm just taking a couple of notes here. Let's see. User 0955. So any word on what to do with an early HDMI 2.0 stuff like Onkyo AV receiver that's Atmos capable? That's a pretty good question. HDMI 2.0 is the current, well, HDMI 2.0A is the latest standard. And it's unfortunate that if your receiver is HDMI 2.0 without the A, then it will not be able to pass through it a high dynamic range content, at least not from one of the two primary HDR formats. One's called HDR10, one's called Dolby Vision. And if it doesn't have HDMI 2.0A, it will not be able to pass through HDR10. It will be able to pass through, potentially, Dolby Vision, which I find kind of interesting, that Dolby Vision does not require that extra A on the HDMI 2.0, which basically signifies that the connector, the HDMI connector, can pass the metadata associated with the high dynamic, with the HDR10 content. Dolby Vision also has metadata, but that metadata is embedded in the actual signal itself. It's not kind of off to the side. And so Dolby Vision can pass through with HDMI 2.0. So you'd be good with HDMI 2.0 with Dolby Vision, but not with HDR 10. So it's this whole HDR thing, man, what a quagmire. My guest next week, we're going to talk about this. He's from Sony. I'll tell you who it is later. But it's just really a quagmire. I've written a number of articles on AVS recently about it. One of them being, if you're shopping for a TV now, this is, you want to look at these TVs because they have high dynamic range capabilities. Their capabilities are different one from the other. Some, and so I've indicated in that list which ones have HDR10 capabilities, which ones have Dolby Vision capabilities, which ones have both, which ones are certified Ultra HD Premium, which basically is a benchmark for, it reaches a certain max luminance, it reaches a certain black level, it implements a certain range of colors. And if you're shopping for a TV now, HDR is the next big thing. And it's really the next big thing. It's not like 3D. Everyone asks me, is HDR just the next 3D? Is it going to come and go? Because 3D has gone. Mark, you wrote about this a couple weeks ago, the TV makers were dropping 3D out of their TVs.
Yeah. Yeah. And not even mentioning it. It's just sort of.
And not even mention, it's just disappearing. And so people are worried, is HDR the next thing? But I say no. I say that is, that's a thing, that is the next thing, but it's here to stay. Mark, you saw HDR for the first time a week or so ago in a Dolby Cinema.
Well, cinematic. Well, you've seen it. HDR.
A cinematic HDR. Yeah.
Yes.
You've seen it.
Sure.
In TVs, well, but
yeah, cinematic HDR is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, so the new goal is to get that in the home in a projector, I think, because to me, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, let's say a modest projector with okay black levels and that big screen experience at home versus like a 65-inch TV with perfect black levels or near perfect black levels. Which one do I fall into more? Which one's more immersive to me? To be frank, the projector gets me even, you know, with less perfect contrast figures and such. So if you can bring that larger, you know, visual experience home, that's the end game. That's home theater heaven. So yeah, seeing it for the first time, it made me realize the true potential of just what an unencumbered, you're just watching it, you know, no gimmicks, nothing really, just a better picture.
Yep.
Than you've seen before.
And I think that's the answer to UJ's question, which is, how would you go about convincing someone, a non-videophile, to buy into HDR for their next UHD TV purchase? And I would say just what you said. It's simply a better picture, significantly, noticeably. You know, some people, when they go out and look at a UHD TV, sometimes called 4K TV, without HDR, it you know, it's, well, yeah, it looks a little sharper, maybe, you know, it's not knock you over the head. Wow. But HDR is. It's just simply a next order of magnitude better picture. As long as you're showing HDR content, which there isn't very much of yet, but it's coming, and it's coming fast. We've got four or five different streaming services that have HDR content: Netflix, Amazon, Vudu, Mgo. Ultra HD Blu-ray is now just starting to come out. The first players are available from Samsung, and the first titles are available, and they have HDR. So, you know, it's, we're right at the beginning, but it just looks so much better. It just does. And so that's my primary argument for it.
Certainly. And one thing I regret not being able to have shown the pictures, but, you know, when I was at CES, Technicolor was showing clips of several Coppola movies, The Godfather and The Cotton Club and Apocalypse Now, that had been rescanned and mastered and were in HDR and looked... Well, okay, I mean, the only minus was that the film grain was enhanced because the actual increased contrast makes it more obvious. But in every other respect, and when Coppola wasn't using one of his like super sensitive low light films, they looked fantastic. And you know, quite a few movies, even older movies, you know, from the '70s at least, are not grainy. You know, are shot in really good stock, shot 70mm. You know, we've seen the Lawrence of Arabia, you know, remaster on Blu-ray. There's even more you can do with that stuff that's on film, because film significantly exceeds the current HD standard in terms of the color gamut and in terms of the dynamic range that's been captured. So it's almost like the majority of the catalog of films you love probably can benefit from an HDR remaster is the reality.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. You know what? We've been having so much fun. I've lost track of time, but I would like to take a moment before we get any further to thank one of our two sponsors for this episode, which is Corning Optical Cables. Now, Corning has transformed the traditional USB and Thunderbolt cables from plain old copper to incredibly durable fiber optic speed demons. Whether you're into high-end video, photography, audio production, or computing, you want the best, most reliable cables out there. Now, I have a Corning USB 3.0 optical cable connecting my computer to my printer. And to show that it works, even when you tie it in a knot, I tied it in a knot. And I was really, really hesitant to tie it in such a tiny little knot until I met with one of the Corning guys at a trade show. And he said, oh, no, it's not a problem at all. And he yanked on it. And I went, whoa! So... Corning is known for fiber optics. And when you think of fiber, you think of glass, right? And glass breaks. So this is why I was concerned about this. Yet Corning Optical has figured out how to make their USB and Thunderbolt cables super strong and flexible. So flexible, you can bend them, walk on them, even tie them in a knot, as I have done. I also roll over this cable with my desk chair once in a while. and they keep transmitting at top speed. Now, speaking of speed, Corning fiber optic cables provide incredible data rates of up to 20 gigabits per second for Thunderbolt and 5 gigabits per second for USB 3. No other cable comes close. Another interesting fact, Corning optical cables are 50% thinner and 80% lighter than traditional copper cables. Corning optical cables have exceptional cable runs of up to 60 meters, that's 200 feet, for Thunderbolt, and 50 meters, or 165 feet, for USB, which means you can declutter moving peripherals into another room, improve productivity, and increase security by putting expensive gear out of the way. Corning optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. And we thank Corning very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. So here's a question from Dr. T. Heading out this weekend to replace my cracked screen 75-inch with a new one. Ooh, congratulations. Good on you. The question is, 4K or not? And can you please give me the two best options on both? If you get a chance, that is. Not sure if 4K at that size may be too pricey. Well, that's a good point. I would say... Oh, I've lost my mouse. Damn. I would say that 4K isn't really that much pricier than anymore. Prices have been falling like stone. It's amazing, actually. 75-inch, yeah, you're gonna pay more for a 75-incher for sure. But I have been looking at HDR TVs, as I mentioned earlier, and... For example, the difference between a 2014 and a 2015 in price is now negligible, at least in Samsung's case. I was looking at some Samsung 2014 TVs, which are HDR capable with the addition of a new interface box and so on. But, you know, you can get a 2015 of the same size for the same price. And that is going to be better, obviously. I mean, each year they improve things and add new features and what have you. So it's they're coming down fast. I would definitely look at, if you're looking at 4K, I would definitely look at a high dynamic range capable set. In which case, go to avsforum.com, look at my piece called HDR Capable Displays, and take a look at that list and see if there's one in there. I don't list them by screen size, only by model line, right? So I'll mention the JS8500, for example, from Samsung, which is a 2015 model. It comes in several screen sizes. I don't remember if it comes in a 75. But the 55 is on the order of $1,500 at like Amazon, places like that. So, you know, it's, you're going to spend $3,000 maybe or something on it. But I would definitely go that way. If it's time to replace a TV, get a high dynamic range HDR capable set by all means. You know, then find one that you can afford. Samsung, I think, is probably the best choice, generally speaking. If you can spend more money than that, go for an LG OLED. But the 77-inch version is, I can't remember, it's five figures. You remember, Mark?
Gosh, no, no, I don't.
No, I can't. Even, yeah, it's you know, it's in the $20,000 range or something. So that's probably not what.
Also, the price on those changes very quickly.
Very quickly. They fall like a stone, too.
They do.
So, you know, I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to the 2016 LG OLEDs, which are both HDR10 and Dolby Vision capable. So they've got both bases covered. And while they can't get nearly as bright as LCD TV, they get much darker, much blacker in the blacks. And so that is, I can't wait to get one in my studio to try that out. They've got four lines. The G6 is the top of the line, flagship line. But the B6, the sort of entry level, still has HDR10, still has Dolby Vision. Basically the same picture performance. LG told me this. All the lines have the same picture performance. It's only a matter of features. And so I'm perfectly happy to lose certain features, many of features, in order to get that super great picture quality at a lower price point. So let's see here. User 0955 asks, most surround systems I've heard do pretty well with upscaling stereo to true 5.1 surround. I wonder what the magic is behind that. You know, that's a very good question. I'm not sure I can answer that authoritatively. It's worth getting somebody on the show to talk about, though. Upmixing, basically called upmixing, from two channels to 5.1 or 7.1 or even Atmos.
I got a great excuse, though, to get into that, or at least to write an article about that, which is simply that, you know, the last month, the first DTS:X updates rolled out on some select Denon ADRs. Now, in 2 days, the Marantz I have in for review is going to get its update. And pretty much all I'm going to have to do with it is play with the upmixer. And I've been enjoying using the Dolby Surround upmixer. So I think that a comparison of those two upmixers is going to be coming very soon.
Yes, very good. Here's a great comment from Ripple Rider. My dream system would come with a fresh pair of teenage ears.
Yes.
I love that because absolutely, you're exactly right. No matter what we do, as we age, we lose our hearing, typically the high end. And if you were exposed to really loud sounds as a teenager, which I was, Mark, you probably were too, you know, then you typically get a notch in your hearing profile in the 2 to 4K range, roughly. Which happens to be right where speech intelligibility is most important. So that's why it becomes more difficult as you get older, if you've been exposed to loud sounds, you have what's called noise-induced hearing loss. It becomes harder to understand what people are saying in a noisy environment. Like if you're at a restaurant or a bar or something, and you find yourself not understanding what people are saying to you, that's probably why. Or that's one common reason why, I should say.
That and the fact that restaurants are ridiculously loud.
Ridiculously loud. And you would know more than most because your wife is a restaurant critic.
Sure.
So you go to a lot of restaurants.
I do, and I whip out the decibel meter, and I'm just sometimes shocked. I'm like, it's fluctuating between 90 and 95 decibels. You know, that lady there laughing makes it 100. It's just...
Yeah, exactly. You know, I saw an interesting article. I don't know when my wife might have forwarded it to me. It was some time ago, about a company doing noise cancellation in restaurants, having speakers around the room and microphones. And they pick up the hubbub and the just sort of general ambience and invert the phase and send that out through the speakers, which lowers the noise floor or the noise level, I should say. I don't really know much more about it than that, but it was intriguing to me because I love noise-canceling headphones on airplanes and stuff. I don't know if that hubbub noise in a restaurant would be steady state enough to work very well, but a company was working on it anyway. let's see here. SoCal Ray Jr. is making a good point. I think that with how large displays are getting, bias light not really needed, sort of like a projector screen. Good point, SoCal Ray, but except for the fact that projection images are so much lower in overall light level than, say, an LCD TV. It might be true of OLED because they don't really produce as much light as much as an LCD TV, but an LCD TV can get really, really bright, which might be a good reason to have a bias light behind there in order to sort of bring your eye into the range that it needs to be in order to be comfortable there. let's see here. Travis KA7TZX must be his call letters. Isn't there a rule of thumb for the size of a TV you should have for a room? The room, his room presumably, is 14 by 12 with a viewing distance of 7 feet. Well, yes, there is a rule of thumb regarding the size of TV versus your seating distance. And the rule of thumb basically is for high definition, that is 1080p, 1920 by 1080, the ideal seating distance, I believe, is 3 times the screen height. And that's for screen height. With UHD or 4K, it's half that. So it's 1.5 times the screen height. And with 8K, which NHK, the Japanese public broadcasting system, shows that at NAB in various places, and the seating distance for 8K is 3/4 of the screen height. So basically you're sitting with your nose almost on the screen. Not quite. That's an exaggeration. But still, it feels really, really close. So those are the general rules of thumb. And the reason for them is how much detail is your eye sensitive to? What's the minimum amount of the sharpest, the tiniest little detail that you can see with your eye naturally, beyond which you can't see any more detail? And so it's sitting at 3 times the screen height for HD means that you'll see all the detail that's there and you won't see the individual pixels. If you get up too close to any screen, you'll see the individual pixels. So you don't want to get too close. Meanwhile, you don't want to get too far away because if you get back beyond a certain distance, you don't get any benefit. You start seeing less detail in the picture because you can't see the fine little details that are in that picture if you're way far back. So those are the general rules for seating distance versus screen size. It doesn't really have anything to do with the room size. It's really your seating distance that's important. Mark, what's your seating distance from what your TVs you usually watch?
It's about 7 feet. And it's a 65-inch TV.
And with a 65-inch TV, that's about perfect for HD.
Right.
Now, here, this brings up an interesting question, which is, are people, when they get 4K or UHD TVs, are they going to sit twice as close than they do now? The answer is probably not, which is another reason why high dynamic range.
They're going to sit at the exact same distance.
And probably with a roughly the same size screen, which is twice as far away as ideal for that resolution, which is why it's so important to have high dynamic range, because you can see the improvement that makes from clear across a room. It really is astounding how much improvement it makes, and it doesn't matter the seating distance. So another reason to, when you're shopping, get an HDR set. You're also somewhat future-proof anyway. The HDR specifications are evolving. They're not quite done yet. There's still some question marks. So, you know, it's not done yet. Those TVs that are out there now may not be completely perfectly future-proof, but it's certainly closer than getting a TV without HDR capability. Let's see. Hey, Beatmaster, good to see you. Let's see here. Who else has got a question that we can do? Yeah, so Cal, I already talked to you about that. Let me get down here a little bit. TV cleaning, blue rules. This is a tough one. I haven't done a lot of research on this. Mark, do you know anything about what the best thing is to do to clean a TV screen?
No, I don't.
Don't either. I don't think it's Windex. I don't think it's... maybe somebody else in the chat room will have an answer.
I honestly don't know the answer to that. No, I use camera lens cleaner because I have it.
Oh, there you go.
My guesstimation is that it's not going to harm a coating, but what we're concerned about is that there's coatings on these screens, that would interact badly, and you don't want to dissolve it, basically.
Right.
Make it good.
Blue Rules makes a good point. It mentions fiber, microfiber cloth, and that's certainly something that I do use, and I'm sure you do too. Glasses cleaning cloth, and I certainly wear glasses and know all about that, and that's very important. He says Samsung TV said use water misted lightly on a microfiber cloth, but that doesn't seem to do anything to the spots. What should I do? Try lens cleaning fluid. That's actually a very good idea. And you can get a spray bottle of glasses cleaning fluid from Lens Crafters or any place like that. So that's probably a good idea. But you know what? That's a worthy question to look into more. So so I will do that. before we get to the next question, Lawn Dog has got a good question here for us. I'd like to take a moment to thank our other sponsor for this episode, which is Ring Video Doorbell. Now, we're all familiar with the sound of a doorbell, right? It means a package is being delivered or friends are coming over for dinner. But it also is the sound of someone planning to rob you. Holy smokes. Over 95% of home break-ins happen during the day. And burglars almost always start by ringing your doorbell to see if someone's home before pillaging your possessions. With the Ring Video Doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. Ring's advanced motion detection alerts you even if someone doesn't ring the doorbell. With Ring Video Doorbell, you can talk to delivery people and keep an eye on your package. If someone tries to mess with it, you'll get an instant alert and HD video of the whole thing. It's like having a neighbor keep an eye on your home 24/7. Now, where I live, I subscribe to a newsletter that comes out, email newsletter, comes out once a week or so. And a few weeks ago, there was an alert that a woman was stealing packages off of people's doorsteps. And I thought to myself, you know what? That would make me kind of nervous because I get a lot of packages here, review products and so on and so forth. But I don't have to worry about that anymore thanks to Ring Video Doorbell, which is really quite great. In fact, SoCal Ray Jr. was over when he was helping me set up the screen and the LS10000 projector. He said, I'm getting an alert from my Ring Video Doorbell. It was his wife who had just come home, but the motion sensor tripped off and he got this alert on his phone. So I thought that was so cool. Installing Ring takes minutes and works with either your current wiring or a built-in rechargeable battery, which lasts about a year before you have to recharge it. So put your mind at ease and protect your home with the video doorbell Time Magazine and USA Today named one of their top 10 gadgets Go to ring.com/HTG for free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/HTG. With Ring, you're always at home. And we thank Ring very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. So Lawn Dog had a question here that's pretty good. Can we predict when 4K broadcasting will be the mainstream in the United States? What's your opinion on when this will happen? My opinion is not for at least 2 years and probably more. And the reason is the standard for 4K or Ultra HD broadcasting isn't even done yet. They haven't even picked an audio standard they're going to go with. There are two choices, two contenders, I should say, AC4 from Dolby and MPEG-H, which is being developed by the German think tank Fraunhofer, who we'll see in NAB next month. But the thing isn't even done yet. Now, the Korean Broadcasting System, KBS, hopes to broadcast the 2018 Winter Olympics, which will be in Seoul, or near Seoul anyway, I think, in 2018. They hope to broadcast that in 4K or Ultra HD. That's pretty optimistic, if you ask me, but it could happen. But it's not going to be anytime soon, if you ask me. Mark, what do you probably haven't heard anything different than I have, right?
Not at all. And you know what I'd like to see is 1080p broadcast, quite frankly.
Yeah, good point. Exactly. We don't even have 1080p broadcasting.
Oh.
Only 1080i or 720p.
It's disgraceful.
It is, kind of. The sports-intensive channels, ESPN, Fox, ABC, which I guess you couldn't call sports and more sports-intensive than CBS or NBC, but those guys do it in 720p, and you get sharper motion detail, although not quite as many pixels as you do with 1080i, I being interlaced. But we don't have any 1080p broadcasting, so you know, they're going to jump over that to 2160p. Yeah, that's the plan, but
it's too bad they're ignoring almost everybody who already owns TVs.
Yeah, exactly. Very good point. Very good point. let's see. We're getting a bunch of questions here. Yes, Beatmaster makes a good point. Samsung offers an external input box for select TVs that are upgradable. Do other brands intend to do something similar, as it seems quite consumer friendly? That's a very good question. I don't know of any other TV brands that do that. Mark, do you?
Never, haven't heard anything like that from anybody else. Nope.
No, some TVs do get firmware updates. Certainly the Sony TVs got a firmware update. The 2015s got a firmware update to do high dynamic range. So did some of the LG OLEDs. But I don't, LG, they might have one or two models with an external input processor box. But for the most part, I think Samsung's really the only one that does that. yes, Emily the Strange, we can't even get 1080p over cable TV. That's exactly right. Radio Rod. Speaking of Elisa's, is that a Quadriverb behind you or a similar rack unit? Actually, no, I don't. I have a Quadriverb, but it's actually in the garage. The reverb unit you see there is from Symmetrics, and that's my primary reverb unit, but that's for the home recording studio, and that's another show altogether. Let's see here. S.R. Mattson is saying, I built a home theater with 10-foot screen projector, a 10-foot screen, 24-by-11 room, 10-foot ceilings. For speakers, I installed 7 BIC America in-wall speakers and use a Polk sub. I've heard of BIC, but I don't know that much about them. Mark, do you?
I have not really had a chance to hear them. So
yeah,
I know
I've heard
the subs get good reviews for economical subwoofers. But yeah, I really can't speak to it.
Yeah, yeah. I've only seen reviews of the subs, not the main speakers. but he wants in walls, apparently. What are our thoughts on relatively inexpensive speakers, yet highly rated, that are in walls? Now, here you've brought up a dirty little secret of speaker reviewers, which is very few can review in-wall speakers, because what does it mean? It means cutting holes in your walls. Mark, you're getting ready to maybe do that, right?
Yeah, that's incredibly difficult to deal with. I have some in-wall speakers in my studio, but they're in boxes because I rent and... But like you said, you know, you rent or own, making a decision to go within walls is something that a reviewer can only really do once, or at least once very infrequently, because of the effort involved and running the cables. I mean, I guess once you run the cables once, that's then you're basically dealing with the cutout size of the hole, and different speakers have different cutout sizes. It's just not something you'd want to do, although granted, the companies that make in-wall speakers do typically offer to pay for it.
But it's still there. You still have the problem of holes in your walls. You know, there was a friend of mine in the industry who's now passed away, and rest his soul, Gary Altunian, built false walls. I guess he had like a separate building on his property. Like a converted garage, I think, something like that. And he actually built false walls inside the real walls that he could cut as many holes in as he wanted, and it didn't matter. So that was how he solved that problem. He's one of the very few people I know to have gone to that trouble to be able to really review in-wall speakers.
If I had a room, I could be a specialist in that, or any reviewer who decided to go all the way like you just described.
Yeah,
they would find themselves with an infinite supply, I think, of speakers.
Speakers, yes. But then there's another problem, which is that some in-walls have what's called a back box, right? So it's a cabinet that is in behind the drivers and basically forms a box that fits between standard distance studs and isn't any deeper than so on to get where it's supposed to be. With a false wall like that, those are perfectly fine speakers, perfectly fine way to review those speakers. But if the speaker doesn't have a back box and it's just open to the back wall, it may be, depending upon the space between the studs that it's mounted to kind of be the something of an enclosure. But with a open, infinite baffle, essentially, back fake wall, then you would get a different result than you would if it was installed in a real wall. So that would be yet another problem. Dr. T is looking at my HDR list right now. Excellent. Oh, he's got some money because the insurance company paid him back because of some construction guys broke the damn TV. Oh, no. Okay, user 0955 has got a question for you, Mark. You've tried the Dolby Surround upmixer, which is part of Atmos. How well do you like it?
Well, I like it very much for music. I really do. I don't know. I haven't paid particular attention to what it does for movies, to be frank. Not in the same way. But being a fan of ambience extraction and upmixing music, it's just the best presentation yet. I actually think that it's very nuanced in how it picks what it's going to expand out into the surround speakers and maybe overhead also. It'll leave, for example, like in a live jazz recording, it'll really leave the band on the stage, you know, and just put the audience out there with you, and also the room reflections, or, you know, some emulation of that room reflection. It's very believable, and to me, it kind of separates itself from what I would call like 2D surround sound, which is just like your 5.1 or 7.1, but that it just exists on a flat plane and doesn't have that height effect. In that it can emulate a room much more believably. So upmixing through Atmos has been very rewarding. It's the best so far. And again, that's why I'm looking forward to DTSX in a couple of days because it'll give me another different app, you know, Upmixer that'll offer a similar, you know, some sort of a similar experience where it's a whole room. I always say this, the thing about reverb is it basically defines the live listening experience for many concerts, especially unamplified music. But, you know, choral, like mass choir music is designed to be sung in a cathedral where you have a 3-second reverb, you know, so that it dies out very slowly. Jazz clubs are intentionally small, and somewhere in between you have the reverb time of a concert hall, which is shorter than a reverb time over an opera house, you know, because they're really designed around the art form, you know, and you can emulate that in your room with the proper recording, or even, and that's what I would say, when the Upmixer is working properly, a 2-channel recording, that ambient information that's in there will actually come through. You know, actually, you were there too. The best example of that is actually neither of those two. It's Oro 3D, which has sort of, you know, it's the poor stepchild of of these 3D immersive formats. Yeah, yeah, but they've been concentrating a bit more on what it can do for music, and at the very last demo at CES was in their room, and they actually played some music, and the ambience extraction to me was the most refined. So I think that there's more work that can be done to make these better. And again, I haven't heard the DTSX. I don't know. You know, maybe in a couple of days.
You will in a couple of days. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll have a new opinion.
I can't wait to read what you think of that. Yeah.
Yeah,
got a couple comments.
I love it.
Good. You love it. Excellent. Got a couple comments about screen cleaning. So let's say that Chickenhead 21 says he typically uses baby wipes, but not too damp. Whereas UJ says distilled water and microfiber cloth. Okay, so give those a try. Couldn't hurt. Nothing wrong with giving those a shot. And SoundPro 69 is asking, what about those Monster brand screen mist silicone bottles? I've never tried those. Have you?
No.
So I don't know. If it's got any kind of either abrasive or a solvent of any sort in it, I would be hesitant. Because some of these screens do have coatings of one sort or another. So I would want to be careful. I'd tend to be more with Chickenhead 21 and UJ about that. But Bleak says a screen cleaner from a computer shop. You can get it at Apple stores as well. That would probably be another thing. Marsworm says just don't spray it on the screen. I agree with that. Put it on the microfiber cloth and use that. So I think that's very good. Let's see.
I suppose, you know, if you're working on a dot that won't come out with your distilled water, you could try putting that distilled water in the microwave just to warm it up a little bit, you know, not boiling.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, heat, warm. Yeah, warmth helps too with that kind of thing. So
Good point. Almost Working is saying, let's see here. If you think about it, tech for TV has moved very fast compared to NTSC. which was there for 30 years before HD. It's very true. And high definition broadcasting, HD broadcasting, technically known as ATSC 1.0, has been around for maybe 15 years, so half as long as NTSC or less. Now they're talking about supplanting it again. This actually implies kind of an exponential curve of, you know, 30 years for NTSC, 15 for ATSC 1.0. How long will it be for ATSC 3.0 before then the next one? Well, that's part of what they're trying to do, I think, and why it's taking so long is they want to make sure that it remains viable for a reasonable amount of time. I think they're talking like 10 years. They're hoping that it stays viable for 10 years. But 10 years goes by like that. So at least in the world of tech, you know, Almost Working. Yeah. Why not build an artificial testing wall? That's what my friend Gary did. Let's see. Neo says, sorry.
Just the answer to that is that you lose space. Yeah, and it's not trivial.
Yes, 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 exactly. Neo says, wouldn't use baby wipes. Aren't safe for all coatings. Here we go. Neo says, Zeiss lens cleaner. Only thing he would use. But your first choice should always be water and a microfiber cloth. Certainly Zeiss knows what they're talking about when it comes to lenses. No doubt about that. Well, you know what? We're kind of running out of time here. I can't believe it. It's already been more than an hour. Let's just see if we have one more quick question. Ripple Rider says, we currently have a generation of teenagers who think that mid-quality MP3 on a phone dock speaker is the pinnacle of sound quality. Yeah, where do you see the relative balance between sound and vision in future products? Good question to end on, actually. I guess Ripple Rider, correct me if I'm wrong, but that sounds like you're sort of saying, is the balance between the relative importance of sound and picture changing? And is the sound quality becoming less important because of this whole tendency towards, you know, MP3s being played on, you know, little desktop speakers or whatever? In terms of audio video, I would have to say I sure as hell hope not. I think that audio and video are equally important and will always be for the video experience. Now, listening to music in the background while you're walking or jogging or riding or something else that's not so critical because you've got a high noise floor. You're thinking about other things. You're not really focused in on the music. So who cares if it's a mid quality MP3, but to really sit down and pay attention, which you would do more in a movie kind of situation, I sure as hell hope that sound doesn't start taking a back seat. Mark, what do you think?
I think technology has reached a point where extremely good fidelity is extremely affordable, and that you're seeing quality creep into convenience devices. Almost like, because after a certain point, it's the only thing you can sell this stuff on. You know, I mean, you've got like a big, innovative, disruptive product like Sonos. You know, that's great. And they got away with, you know, for years being just mediocre sounding. But, you know, their latest release are really great sounding. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Apple take Beats headphones, you know, and make them into decent sounding product also, just because, you know, once you've figured everything else out, the aesthetics and the operation, that's going to be your selling point. And again, you know, material technology, the way they design speakers and amps these days, you can model everything in a computer and have a really good idea how it's going to work ahead of time. You know, so a smart designer, they can work with knowing ahead of time what the situation is with manufacturing and manufacturing costs and create an incredible product that doesn't cost a lot. So I think that you'll see more and more stuff where the quality is inherent in the product, even though, you know, people didn't necessarily ask for it explicitly. They just, you know, they just want to buy something better, you know, just an upgrade. And part of that automatically will be an improvement in quality. I mean, maybe that's overly optimistic, but I think that's where it's going. I've heard a lot of headphones, a lot of speakers lately that, you know, it's just hard kind of to find one that's extremely flawed. Not like it used to be.
Mm. Yeah. As we said almost at the beginning, you know, dream audio system, you know, when I think of that, sure, I go to the Wilsons and the Revels and the really, really expensive speakers, but you can also get phenomenal performance out of ELAC and Golden Ear. Golden Ear is not exactly cheap, but it's certainly not in the same realm as the really expensive speakers.
You could buy JBL studio monitors, I think it was LSR 308 or something for $400 a pair. Self-powered, yeah, 8-inch woofer.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal really, speakers.
I mean, and that's from a top brand. What are you even going to say?
Yeah. But not much else to say about that. So both Mark and I are very optimistic that, the sound quality will stay there. It will improve, especially at the lower price points. And we have a bright future ahead of us, eh, Mark?
yeah, totally. I mean, and we don't have to stream at 128 kilobits per second. 320 sounds really good. So,
yeah, Well, listen, we've run over time, and it's been a great hour talking with the chat room and talking with you, Mark. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Always a pleasure.
You bet. Mark Henninger and I are both at avsforum.com, so be sure to go there and check out all the stuff that we post there. You can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott and at avsforum. Actually, Mark is contributing to that more than I am, I'd say. You can find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/htg. And on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit/HomeTheaterGeeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Don Eklund, Senior Vice President for New Format Promotion at Sony Corporate. Now, Don was actually the fourth guest ever on Home Theater Geeks. He was at Sony Pictures at the time. He's now at Sony Corporation. And we're going to be talking about high dynamic range and all the new format stuff that we touched upon today as well, but in much more detail. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.